Okay. Welcome, everybody. My name's Stephen Blake, the Thought Coach. I operate from Lincolnshire, but I also work over the internet and over Skype. I particularly need to see people when I'm working with them. I pick up a lot from the accent and things like that. So that's how I work. I typically do large breakthrough sessions with people, usually in one session, but between 3 and 5 hours. I also do coaching, classes, and putting together a lot of things, which, if you fill in the prize drill, will help me to design the right materials that people want. Can you hear me all right at that? Okay, yeah. If you saw me yesterday with the microphone, I was happy. Right, so this is about givers and takers, and this stemmed from a blog I wrote probably 3-4 years ago. And in it, I'm a giver, so I sort of like experienced things throughout my life of being told as Mr. Nice Guy, being called Mr. Nice Guy, but in a derogatory manner, which I just didn't understand. I didn't understand what was wrong with Nice Guy. And I come across this all my life, and in a few relationships, I've been married for 15 years for somebody who I met at 17. So after that, it was a bit strange for me to do dating and things, because I didn't know how it worked. I was still a 17-year-old, so I didn't quite understand this. And so with all this giving, I actually started to formulate why things went wrong in future relationships. And my initial analysis was that, well, givers meet takers, and that's fine because you've got something to give each other. But wouldn't it be great if two givers got together? That was my initial blog, and that was my analysis of it. But since then, I've actually worked it through and thought, no, that's not going to work. Because what happens is, you have givers and takers. You'll obviously have a mixture of those as well. But generally, in a relationship, there's a giving person, and there's a person that receives and takes. And you both do. Initially, it's brilliant, because givers like to give, and the joy they get is from giving. And somebody who likes to receive, but is not that bothered about giving, goes, wow, I've met somebody, and they go, give, and I go, tick, oh yeah, that's wonderful. And so both of you get a real great amount out of it. But the issue is that it can't continue that imbalance. And givers tend to do this thing where they're giving. But when somebody says to them, oh, you have some of this, they go, oh, no, I don't need that. You know, I don't need anything, I'm fine. Or you give them a compliment, and they go, well, this whole thing, I just threw it up. Now, if you think about that, the other person, you both make each other happy initially. And to continue that happiness, you both have to get something out of it. And if you get rejected on a regular basis, you stop doing whatever it is that you were doing. And it doesn't take too long for this to happen. And the takers aren't too bothered by it much, really, because it's sort of like they still keep getting this giving. So they're quite happy with it. But the giver starts to get to this stage of resentment. So they'll actually do this thing for long enough. And I'll give you a very good example once. I don't think there's a guy on the planet, except me, that knows how many flowers are too many flowers. I was in a relationship for 4 weeks, and I got dumped for giving her too many flowers. Now, I don't know if this has ever happened in the history of the world before, but it was like 5 bunches of flowers in 4 weeks. That's just needy. I can't cope with this. What can I possibly give you? It's sort of like... And she told me to like that, so I was surprised. And then I was wrong for doing it. So this is a really, that was a really quick example and a strange example of it. But it's how it works. And when I first met my girlfriend and became my wife, and we were 17, and every Friday night I got paid, so we both smoked, so I bought her a pack of cigarettes every Friday night. And this happened for a few weeks, and then one Friday night I went, and she went, where's my fags? I thought, that's the last packet I could have. I didn't have to say it, but that was it. And I should have realised from that before getting married 4 years later. I didn't. So there's this resentment that builds up within inside you of giving. But there's also other things happening at the same time. If you're a natural giver, you give to everybody else as well. And you give freely of your time, energy, and your mental emotions and everything. And your partner then has to put up with this sort of like, well, when you're not busy looking after me, you're busy looking after everybody else, which then interferes with the time that you look after me as well. And so it encroaches into this relationship. And so things get out of kilter with how it works. Now, there's a natural balance in relationships. And I don't know if you've ever thought of this, because I've never read this anywhere. But the one who loves the least has the power. You'll get that. If you're balanced in a relationship, which is very rare, but you know, it's wonderful. You neither of you have power over the other one. But as soon as somebody doesn't care about the other one, and the other one loves them to bits, this one has total power over them. And some will abuse it, and some will just, you know, not use it at all. But it does change the dynamics. So a giver that's giving initially, loves and loves equally, and so there's no power balance there. But as soon as you get to the point where you start regretting doing all the things you're doing, you actually start to have the power. Then you start demanding things of a taker. Now that's not a great thing, because they're not very good givers. So you start demanding things that initially you pushed away. So you have to be very careful in this balance of things. And the real analysis of this is, givers have to learn how to receive. Because if you don't learn how to receive, you can't give very well. And you don't understand giving and receiving. You just give, give, give. And there's some inbuilt program there that's actually saying, I need to please other people. But you don't particularly please yourself. So I want to talk about assertiveness. Now, the majority of problems I see with people is lack of assertiveness. And when I've talked to people before about assertiveness, they actually start saying, but I don't want to become aggressive. And it's exactly the opposite. If you're not assertive, you either just put up with things all the time, or in the end, you become aggressive. And the aggression is not with the other person. You might take it out on the other person, but when you get angry about, I'm doing all these things and nobody seems to bother, and if I didn't do it, nobody would, it makes you cross at yourself. And when somebody says, oh, can you do this for me? Can you do this for me? And you keep going, yes. The second after you say it, you start regretting. And as soon as you regret it, you're actually turning what could be a pleasurable thing into a task. You turn it into a job. This is where all your should have, I must, I have to, oh, this is coming up, I've got to do this. And you even volunteer for things and then do, I've got to go there on Saturday, as though it's some dreaded thing. And I spoke about this yesterday, and I said, some of these things, like should, must, have to, replace it with the word love to. Because it's very difficult to get annoyed about missing something that you'd love to do. Right? I'd love to do that. You put it on your list, I'd love to mow the lawn today. Oh, I don't do it, right, I'd love to do it tomorrow. And then when you get around to doing it, you actually love doing it. But we build up all these resentments inside because we're not assertive enough. Assertive is not aggression. Assertive is actually saying, this is what I want, or this is how I feel. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with making those statements. However, what we usually put in with it is, this is how you made me feel. Which is an entirely different thing, because you're now introducing a blame factor. So if you say, oh, the other day you did this, this is how you made me feel. I was all angry and I was all sad. You made me feel like that. What's the other person going to do? Are they going to apologise? Or are they going to defend themselves and go, well, that's just you. That's me not enough. And this thing about silent treatment that we give people. If you give silent treatment, I think this is different from where there is in the sexes. Or gender. Guys tend to sort of, if they don't know the answer, they'll go quiet. Because they don't know the answer and they haven't thought it through yet, so they go quiet. But a woman will do the, that'll teach you a lesson. Right? So when guys say to a woman, are you alright? You go, yes. We go, oh, she's alright. And that's it. And you go off in a huff for like 2 weeks, and we gradually get used to not hearing you and not doing things and so on, and we just sort of go. And what do we learn from that? We just learn that you've had a mood. We haven't actually learned what triggered you off, why it triggered you off, or why we should do something differently in the future. We can't actually take learning from it because we're not good at working out what particular thing it was that triggered you. So, we all need to do this, males, females. We all need to say what it is that we want. And in a non-threatening way. So the other day you did this, actually I felt quite bad afterwards because of this, or I felt this way, or I was quite upset because of. But the issue is when we get upset with somebody else, it's quite often we're upset with ourselves. Because a lot of us do mind reading. Is anybody here qualified as a mind reader? Well, if you're not qualified as a mind reader, I don't know how you do that. Let me guarantee you that you're rubbish at it, okay? Because with clients, I actually listen to what they're saying and watch the reactions, and quite often can say something to them, and they'll say, how do you know that? And I go, well, I don't mind read, but you just told me. And they go, well, I didn't say that. And I always say, you didn't say it, but you told me. Because when you were saying a certain thing, I saw your face, or your tears went up, or whatever, so you have to tell me. So we have to make sure that it's crystal clear about what we say about things, and how we do it, in this sort of open thing. Now, when you mind read, you go into the mind of the other person, and a hyper person came to me for hypochondria. And the main issue behind the hypochondria was that she was always reading everybody else's mind and what they thought about her. In reality, if you think what other people think about you, that's your thoughts. At no point did it ever come out of their head. So she was going inside somebody else's head and saying, well, this is what you'll think about me. I know you do. And then she would get upset about what this person thought about her. And then she would react differently to this person. So this person would then stop calling her or whatever. So she'd now go, well, they've stopped calling me. That proves they might feel that way about me. So it just reinforced the whole thing. And she just kept doing this. And every time she came to see me, and she'd become a friend with me, she would talk and she would tell me about some incidents that had just happened. And I'd say, well, perhaps he didn't return the call because he didn't get it. He must have got my call. And she made this really long story of why this person hadn't responded to her, and that he didn't like her anymore and everything else. All made up, every single bit of it, because every week the same story came out about a different person. So when you start to think you know what somebody else is thinking, you don't. And then one week she came and she said, I've caught you out now, she said. Somebody told me the other day I'm horrible. And I said, all right, okay. So before you were reading what they thought, what you thought they thought about you, but now this person said, you're horrible. Whose brain did that come from? And she said, theirs. And I said, yeah. So is that about you then, or is that about how they think? Well, that's about how they think. I said, well, who are you to interfere with how they think? Right? That's about them. You'll never have anybody in the world nice say horrible things about you. You think of everybody you know that you would call nice. Have you ever heard them say a bad thing about anybody? No. So the two things don't go together. And how we live as humans is we have to absorb lessons. And we take on different things in our life. No, I'm going to ask you where I was. Mind reading. No, after that. Oh, look at this, man.
I can't read your mind.
Margaret, just a minute. You were taking notes. Where was I?
Okay,
mind maps. Sorry, yeah, that was a very nice thing. Mind maps are our view of the world. Now, even if you had an identical twin, they will not be the same as you. They might look like you, they might act a little bit like you, but in their head is a series of lessons that attended the same school, they had the same parents, everything else. They are different, because how they perceive things is slightly different. And as you perceive things, you actually change the filter in your head that allows things in. So you see things differently. You see what you expect to see. So no two people are the same. But we all have this map of our world. Now, we all assume that our map of the world is the same as everybody else's map of the world, because why wouldn't it be? So I quite often have people who come and tell me they've got a problem, and they say, well, everybody's got this. And I go, how do you know that? And they go, well, I've got it. Well, that's not everybody, is it? And so you have this map of the world. Now, when we get on well with somebody, when we get an instant rapport with somebody we've just met, it's usually because something clicks. Either they're wearing a colour we like, or we're both from the same town, or something happens where you go up from there and they go, oh, I was born in Lincoln. Oh, crikey, did you go to that school? And then there's a series of things. And what you're doing, you're matching each of these maps up. And then if you talk about other things, and then the person says, well, I like football. And you go, I like football. And they go, then that's something else on the map that fits. And when we start a relationship, it's because we have a rapport with that person. And we have this instant rapport that means there's something that you both like about each other. And sometimes I've noticed that actually face shapes are the same in couples. Have you anybody else noticed like that? You know, dogs are supposed to groan like the owners. Well, I think there's this visualization. You look in the mirror every day and you think, well, that's handsome or that's pretty. And then you look for somebody who looks like that. I don't think that, because I don't think many people do that. But I think there's a matching there of you recognize something in this person. And it's at an unconscious level, but they look like it. And so you sort of get on in that way. And then you start talking, and then you find out you've got the same things in the same place on your map. But the automatic issue is that you then assume that everything on your map is exactly the same as this person's map. And this is when rows start. Because you say, oh, well, I thought you would have done that. And they go, oh, well, why do you think that then? Well, I would have done it for you. And it's like thought transference, you know, I thought it, so you should have done it. But this is making a massive assumption that this person has the same everything on their map. So I think arguments are absolutely a waste of time. I think good discussions about different things are brilliant, but an argument is actually saying to somebody, this is here on my map, right, got it? And they go, well, it's over here on mine. And you go, yes, but it goes here. So put it on your map there. And they go, but I don't want to put it on my map there. I want it here. And you go, but it doesn't fit there, does it? Anybody, any idiot can see that. Right? And then an argument starts. Now, what is the point in getting somebody to move something from there to there on their map? Right? Might make your life slightly easier. But we're not mind readers, so we have to talk to each other. We have to tell each other about how things work for us. Has anybody read the book Men Are From Mars, the Moon, and From Venus?
Yeah,
okay, quite a few of them. The main bit I got out of that book, and it seems to be the biggest issue, is that when a woman says to a man, I had this problem today, guys are fixers. We will instantly try and fix it for you. Which really annoys the women, because they just want to be listened to. Because if you went to a girlfriend, they would listen to you. But a guy will immediately try and fix you. And the opposite way around, the guy comes in with this thing and he doesn't want to tell you about it. Because he can't fix it, so how can you fix it? So he goes quiet. So there's a big difference between the two sexes and how they react to each other. But neither of it is wrong. So it shouldn't be that a female expects a guy not to fix it and just to listen. And the guy should understand that when he's being asked or being told something, just bloody listen. It's a damn sight easier. Because all you have to do is keep nodding your head and going, oh, please, that's good. There's a brilliant video on the internet of a couple talking, and she starts off saying, you know, I've had this headache for days now, and it's spreading, and it's awful, and I don't know what I'm doing. And then she turns around to him, and she's got a nail stuck out of her head. And then she rambles on, and he keeps looking at this nail. And she's rambling on, and he goes, well, what if we took the nail out of your head? It's not the nail! I just want to be listened to. And he's like, okay. So he goes into listening mode, and you go, yeah, fine. She goes, terrible thing. I've had these headaches for days. All my jumpers are stacked. Just don't know what's going on. And he's looking at this nail. And it just shows the difference between the two sexes in how to deal with them. But we've all got to go for 50 to understanding that just because we act in a certain way, we don't expect other people to act in a certain way. And so if you want to be listened to, just say, I'm just going to tell you this, but please don't try and fix it. I'd just like to be listened to. And just nod your head and, you know, don't watch the tablet or text me. Okay. Or the guy will go, well, I'm just, if you go in and you say, I'm a bit quiet because I'm just a bit puzzled over something and I need to go to my cave and fix it on my shed or down the pub with my mates or something because I'm not clear on it. And if you're not clear on something, if you push a guy for an answer and he's not clear on it, what answer are you going to get? He'll either say something to please you or he'll make something up. But it won't particularly be helpful towards the relationship. So, when relationships start to go a bit sour, just have a look in there and see if there's this giving and taking and it's got a bit one-sided. And the issue is that once each other, you're not making each other happy. Because the big issue is actually, if you make each other happy, it's a sort of, it carries on, it's this virtuous circle. They make you happy, so you make them happy, and it's a sort of repayment all the time. As soon as one side stops feeling that they're making the other side happy, they become sad. This side is now not getting any attention either, they become sad. And there's a brilliant thing that Tony Robbins talks about, which is an infinity sign, like it's eight on its side. And one side is upset, and the other side is angry. And the human mind has a need for variety. So if I had somebody out here now who was absolutely livid and we left them on that chair all day ranting and raving, they couldn't carry on doing that. Because at some point they just get fed up ranting and raving and they need to do something else. And so this infinity thing is, when something really bothers you, you either start at the angry point or you start at the upset point. It will start somewhere in here. And you have a tendency to one or the other. So if you start at the upset point, you actually start in this swoop, and you stay upset, and then you get realised, and then you get really angry about being upset and that they're not responding, and you move over to the anger side. And then as you stay in anger for long enough, then you get to the point where you think, oh, this is useless, and you go back to the upset side. And you keep going through this loop, angry and upset. Depending on your personality, you'll spend a lot more time in one side than the other. And it's not a sort of like, you know, you've got to do that, you sort of set off, but then shoot at the other one. And you'll spend time in either of those two things. And we then tend to do things that bring us out of that. So one of the things is to drop out of this loop. We drop out in the middle bit and we go into drink, drugs, alcohol, gambling, sex addiction, all sorts of things. That gives a nice feeling of food just for a very short time. And then we go back up and we join this loop again. At some point, we're not going to be around again. And the only way to get out of that loop is to actually go up from it, analyse what's happening, and change it around. So, in a relationship, it can get to the point. I helped somebody recently who was in a relationship and they'd just got the wrong idea and they'd pushed somebody away for a particular reason, but still loved them. and their partner still loved them, but they'd been pushed away. And it was going through the divorce stages and everything else, and it gets to the point where it's sort of like, that's how it's going to inevitably end up, if you think that that is how it's going to end up. But I saw that she was love on both sides. And when I talked to her, she absolutely started to see it herself, that she was still in love, that he was still in love with her. And I said, what you need to do is go home and actually say why you got to the point that you did. And then you have to build upon how you started off, because when you met each other, you actually behaved differently to each other. Right? And there's just subtle things, like when you talk to someone, just touching their arm. I mean, touch is the most wonderful thing. And you just transmit something. So just doing that thing, or while they're washing up, or hugging somebody from behind while they're doing something, just say, oh, I missed you, or it would love to have been with you today. And we stopped doing that after a while. And it's such a shame, because it's such a beautiful thing to do. How are we going to have time? Oh, that's brilliant. Great time. So, my wonderful assistant, Trudy, over there, I'm going to show you a technique that actually brought Trudy into my life. We don't have to sit further forward so you can hear. In a moment, I'm going to show you a technique that I hope you'll enjoy, and it's about love and joy. So, I went to an event very similar to this in Lincoln, and it was a slack time, and I just sat on a stool, and I did not a meditation, but a thing that I do, where I actually go inside, and I think about somebody I love deeply, and I make it unconditional love, and then I send it out, and expand it out of my body, right around the world, and I put it back into it. And the thing about love and joy is you can't do it from a sealed heart. But people talk to me about love and say love is painful. No, it's not. Love is the most wonderful thing. The loss of love is painful. The wrong falling in a one-sided love affair is painful. But that's not really love. Love is the most wonderful thing ever. When somebody has a broken heart and they go, I'm never going to let somebody hurt me again, they actually lock all that pain in their heart, and they keep it, and they keep it forever. Because you end up bitter, because you actually don't get to share your love with anybody else. You have to open up your heart, and sometimes you'll get hurt, sometimes you'll make wrong choices. And the thing about life is that we have these programs. And these programs we mainly loaded up before we were six. And they run our life. They dominate our life. This is how life works. All the things that we learn from our parents and friends and school and all the kids that we're playing around with and things. If you were brought up in a lovely area with loving, caring parents, you expect a great life like that, and you'll probably have a great life like that. If you start off with a terrible life and abuse and all sorts of things, it's very difficult to break that cycle, because that's how you think life is. And that's where I help people with, is going back and actually sorting out the lessons that you take from your life. You change these loops that hold you back. So quite often we're fixed in the ideas of things. And this is why people get married six times or whatever. And if you say, well, analyse it then, they'll say, well, that particular gender, they're all bad. Right? I don't know why I keep going and marrying people, they're all bad. And they're not. If you've been married six times, who's the person that it was in every single of those marriages? It's you. Right? And if you analyse it carefully, not you've been bad, you're just bad at picking things. Right? You've jumped into a relationship that seemed in its wonderful early stage, and it hasn't got to the point where it settles down and you know that everything's fine and you've made it work. You then leapt out and started again. So if you take the right analysis from all of your programs that run you and actually say, well, what can I learn from this? And things that you don't learn will keep coming back to you. And it's a bit like expecting the delivery. We keep getting messages, so we keep getting dreams and repeated things that actually have meaning. But we ignore them. Or we get physical pain from it. because the way we think actually changes how we feel. Anxiety and things brings on lots of problems with stomach and heart and all the internal organs. And so, as soon as we change the thoughts, we actually change how we are physically and health and everything else. So, who's up for sending out love all around the world? All of you? You all right with that? Okay. Right. Is everybody all right for sending unconditional love? Okay. All right with that? Anybody not want to join in? All I'd like you to do is put your notepads, pens down or whatever, make yourself comfortable. And I'm going to have a big slug of water. Right. Okay. Just take three large breaths for me, please. And just notice every time you breathe out, your shoulders drop and let them stay down there. And the thing about relaxation that most people don't understand is you can't try to relax. All you can do is let go. So I just want you to let go of those muscles and just let them hang. And now you go inside your head and I want you to think of somebody or something, can be your dog or anything, that you have unconditional love for. So this is about giving, this is not about receiving, this is just... you have total unconditional love for that thing or that person. And I just want you to go inside and just look for where that feels. So feel it inside you, just feel wherever that emotion is of unconditional love. And I want you to start to swirl it round and just let the molecules drift apart and expand out. And just feel this wonderful feeling, double it. Treble it. Make the feeling bigger and brighter and bolder. 10 times the volume now. And feel it swirling around wherever it started and feel as it gets to the outer layer of your skin, it's actually pushing away your skin and trying to get it out. Just fill yourself absolutely up with unconditional love. And when it gets so tight under your skin it wants to burst out, I want you to then fill this room up with love. Can you feel that already? I can feel it. And fill the whole of your cup with love. And now just visualize it going over the whole of the world. See the world as a big globe. And see it disappearing off in every direction. You sending out unconditional love. And just see all the people it touches along the way. And how it brightens the day up. And how they actually add to the love that's going around the world. So this world, love, your love is going around the world. And it's increasing in volume all the time. It's going off in every single direction. And it's now going underneath the world and it's coming back up towards you. And it's like a millionfold and it's now coming back into the room and it's coming back into you. And just feel that for a few seconds. Just feel that wonderful feeling of love that you generated. Just hold on to that for a few moments. Okay, open your eyes when you're ready. Feel that. Yeah? Did you get that? Did everybody get the intensity of it coming back? Anybody not get the intensity? Okay. This is something you can practice all the time, along with gratitude. I forgot the story. So I was at Lincoln at an event like this. I sit on this chair and I do this. I fill myself up with love and energy and I send it out. And suddenly it comes back into me, and it's like, wow, I feel really good now. And I sat there for about a few minutes, and then Judy came into my life. And she had done a similar thing as she entered the building, and we just fell in love. And that was in there. And it's the most wonderful relationship I have. So, in life, just analyse yourself carefully. Understand what's driving behind you. Understand that you can get rid of any of these programs that you're running that don't suit you. Have we got some spare minutes?
5 minutes.
5 minutes, okay. Who wants to learn how to talk to their unconscious without actually going into trance or anything? Would you all like to do that? Everybody? Okay.
I just want to know how we break the cycle. If we've got a giver and a taker.
and then you need something back if you're suffering a bereavement or something, they can't have that. Is that an unbalanced relationship, or does it always feel like that you're always going to be the giver?
Well, no.
You don't mind being the giver 80% of the time, but sometimes you just need your unwell loss.
You do need it back, but the trouble is, by that time, you push people away. But you do if you don't receive very well. Because just people give them a compliment and... Well, sorry, I'll talk to you later on that individual thing. Now, when I talk about these cycles of things, these trapped programs that you've got, everybody thinks you need to go to somebody like a hypnotherapist or whatever and be put into a trance so we can access that. You actually access this every minute of every day with your self-talk. You either sabotage yourself or you build yourself up. So to walk on the stage in front of hundreds of people, you actually say, you know, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to be brilliant. If you go out there and go, I'm going to be awful today, you will be. Right? So your unconscious hears everything you say. But I want you to understand that your unconscious does this. And we're going to do this once, and then you can use it at home, anytime in the future, to talk to your unconscious to actually say, I want to put this new program in, and you have to go on with it a bit, right? Because the new program at the moment, if you try and do it with your conscious, that's willpower, and it won't win. Right? But if you bargain with your unconscious and you say, this program that's running, that's bloody awful, and I don't want it anymore, and the new program we're going to have is this one, and that's going to be better for my health than everything else. So all I'm going to teach you today is how to ask your unconscious for a yes. You don't ask it for a no. And you don't run your life by going, shall I do this, shall I marry Fred, yes or no, shall I go to work today, yes or no. You don't do all that rubbish. You actually ask your unconscious for a yes, and if it doesn't answer, it means it needs a bit more convincing. So just think of it as like a small but helpful child that's looking after you. And if you actually say, will you do this? It'll go, no. Right? Will you do this? No. Whereas if you actually say, I'd like you to do this, just give me a yes when you've done it. If it goes quiet, you just go, okay, right. The reason we're doing this is, and then you keep going through the explanation until you get to the point where it goes, that sounds a good idea, let me give you a yes. And it won't lie to you. So I switch off pain with this technique. And I'll say to somebody, is it helpful to switch the pain off? And they go, yes. And I'll go, well, as soon as you switch the pain off, tell me, give me a yes. And it gives you a yes. And then you switch the pain off. Sometimes it won't switch the pain off because there's a reason to not switch. But that's what you can use it for as well. So, I'd like you to all stand up. It's really easy to come out here for a minute. Okay, move where you can see me for a second. In a moment, I'm going to get you to do this. So, Trudy's just going to put her feet fairly close together so she's on a point of balance. And then I'm just going to ask Trudy's unconscious to give you a demonstration of giving a yes. So, I regularly talk to Trudy's unconscious. So, Trudy's unconscious, we want to give her a yes, but we want it to do in such a way that she's absolutely convinced it's her unconscious and not just her going, don't know if that was me or whatever. You can do this with a pendulum, but with a pendulum, you're never quite sure if you've made it with a circle or whatever. Okay, but with this one, it's foolproof. So, unless you've got a back problem or something, everybody okay? Right, so I just want you to ask, and I'll talk you through it. You're going to ask your unconscious for a yes, and I'm going to get it to give you a very solid backwards, forwards, side to side, or whatever it thinks it needs to convince you of a yes. As soon as you've got a yes, sit down. If you stay up, I'll come and help you. Okay? So, just everybody now, just take a few seconds out, a few deep breaths. Absolutely relax. Just let things go. Don't try and relax. You can't try to relax. So just let things go. Just look somewhere above eye level on the wall or something in front. And then just say to yourself, okay, thank you unconscious for everything you do in my life. You've run my heart, my lungs, my blood, my temperature, my pH balance, the whole lot. Thank you for all that. I just want you to give me a yes because I want to understand that you exist and I can talk to you. So if I could talk to you, just give me a yes that you're hearing me. In such a way that I definitely know. That I definitely know. And sit down as soon as you've got the yes. Okay? If you haven't got the yes, stay up and I'll help you. Okay? Can you come out front? Do you want to come out front? Just because this might be helpful. Are you all right at relaxing?
Yes.
Can you relax? Yeah. Can you relax in front of 70?
No, not really.
Okay. So this is just your unconscious. This is just to give you a yes that your unconscious exists and it's looking after you, and we've thanked it already. So it's just going to give you a yes now that you can talk to it whenever you want to, and it will listen. Okay? So I wanted to give you something like that or that. You're a little bit stiff, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay, so just relax a little bit. Okay? And I just want you to give your unconscious to give you that yes. Just close your eyes for a second. And as soon as it gives you the yes, I think that's a yes.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah, going backwards. Thank you.
Okay. Now you've been in touch with your unconscious, it literally is as simple as that. You can talk to your unconscious whenever you want to. The reason I say don't ask a yes-no, if you ask for yes-no things, it's going to look in its directory of programs and it's going to base it on the previous rubbish that you've got in there. All right? So if you say, should I do this job or whatever, it'll look at all your previous programs and go, oh, I did a job like that before and it was a bit scary, or I got the sack or whatever. So don't use it for yes-nos. Use it to actually interfere with this program, to actually say, I'm running this program, it's not great in my life, I keep thinking about this. If you've got a program that's stuck, analyse it first. There will be a message in it. In fact, I'm nearly getting to the message bit. Right, so, if you've got a message, and somebody comes to your door with a parcel, and as they approach your front door, they can see you through the kitchen window that you're in, and they knock on the door, so they go, parcel! You ignore them. Do they go away? No, they go, parcel! And they still ignore them, but they can see you. So they know you're in. So they kick the door, parcel! And that's what your conscious is doing. It actually gives you a message that you need to do something about. All your emotions and messages, anger, frustration, all of these things are a message saying, do something about it. But we ignore it at our peril. So if we hold anger in or we hold frustration in and we don't release it, that's when we get ill because we trap it in our body. Okay, I've been Stephen White, you've been absolutely wonderful. Thank you very much. Thank you. And we'll see you now.